How important are the judicial nominees? We're going to talk about that right now with Carrie Severino, the president of Judicial Network. JudicialNetwork.com is their website. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. Carrie, it's great to have you back on the program. So how important is the judiciary in the country?
Well, it's never been more important than it is right now when we are seeing so many people who want to radically change the way our government works without going through the constitutional process. Anytime our legislators pass laws, our president signs them, the only way we can ensure that the laws stay as our representatives have passed them is if the courts are following them. So this is something, these federal judges in particular serve for life. It couldn't be a bigger impact.
And I understand President Trump has recently appointed, confirmed, and now it's gone through. Well, he didn't confirm them, but he appointed them, 200 federal judges. That's quite an accomplishment.
That's a huge number, and it's even more impressive when you look at the number of appeals court judges. Those are the judges where 99% of the cases end. In two terms in office, President Obama appointed 55 appellate judges. President Trump has already appointed 53. So he's almost caught Obama's two-term record, which is really impressive. And I think if he gets another 4 years, we'll see even more of these outstanding judges. Those men and women are some of the people who are now going to be on his new Supreme Court shortlist. He's updating that list, and it's so exciting because these Trump nominees really are unique. They all have been chosen specifically, not just for their brilliance, their experience, obviously, but also for their courage. These are people who have experience of standing up for making a difficult decision that they knew was the right one legally, but they also knew they were going to get pushback for. That's exactly what you want to see in your judges.
Okay, now let me just play the other side here for a moment, okay? If we were having this discussion 2 weeks, well and good, 2 weeks ago, but in the meantime, we had this terrible decision from Neil Gorsuch, who was one of President Trump's appointees. You and I have already discussed that mm-hmm. case, and you basically said, well, that particular decision by Gorsuch is atypical for him, and you have hopes for better things from him in the future, but at least address it if you would.
Sure. Well, I absolutely agree. As much as I supported Justice Gorsuch during his confirmation, I still think he's a good justice. He still overwhelmingly agrees with Justice Thomas more than other justices. I'm going to call it out when I think he gets it wrong. And the Bostock decision, he got it very, very wrong. There were other judges and justices, like Justice Scalia even, who I really respect and admire, who got decisions wrong. He had one of his major religious freedom cases. It was so bad that Congress had to pass a bipartisan, overwhelmingly passed bill, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, to fix his bad decision. So have great judges come up with really bad decisions before? Yes. Now we have to watch and see what happens. I think today we had one case that handed down by the Supreme Court gives me more encouragement. That one had to do with immigration law, and Gorsuch was right back there with the same, conservative justices, and actually even two of the liberals joined them this time. Seems like that hopefully was an anomaly, the Bostock decision. But I agree, we got to keep watching and make sure that we're doing everything we can to look at someone's record and look at their experience. With Gorsuch, this kind of came out of left field because that was all done. And even, there are people all the way down looking at his 10 years on the court saying, he's a textualist. He always has been a textualist. So, you can't predict someone completely changing like that, but I do think that in this case it will hopefully be an anomaly.
What are your thoughts about John Roberts? He has certainly disappointed conservatives, but not 100% of the time, thankfully, but he certainly has disappointed in some big cases. Your thoughts?
Definitely has some major disappointments, but I agree. A lot of the time, he there's a lot of things he does get right, but what's most concerning about Roberts is there seems to be a real pattern with him of allowing the courts to be co-opted by liberal special interests who are basically threatening the court with, hey, if you don't rule the way we want, we're going to run articles saying you're all political and this is just a political gig. So in order to avoid looking like he's political by ruling in a way that the conservatives might want, Roberts is actually ironically being more political because he seems to be basing his decision on what the political ramifications are going to be rather than what the simple legal analysis would lead to. That seems to be what happened in the DACA case last week. I think a lot of people are looking at the Obamacare case, last year's census case. Those times when it's a major issue in the press, and the press gets wound up saying, "Oh no, it's going to be a politicized court." That's actually what triggers Roberts to make these political decisions. That is a real concern. I'm hoping that's not something that happens on many more cases this term, but I have to say, once it's become a pattern, you have to be really concerned. And that's actually, you know, his behavior in the Obamacare case really changed the way judges were selected. That's the reason Trump judges, I think, look very different from Bush-era judges, because they specifically were vetting not just for what they have done and said as judges in terms of their philosophy, but also in terms of their courage, because I think a lot of people just perceive this as John Roberts doesn't have the courage to stand up and tell it like it is if he knows he's going to get, you know, negative op-eds and people saying they don't like him. And so I think that's the difference you're going to see with these Trump judges versus some of the previous generation.
You know, you wonder, is there something in the water at the Supreme Court? And by the way, I've discussed this before. I even had the privilege to just talk about this with Robert Bork. And he said, wow. He said, listen, and this was back, he was at the American Enterprise Institute when I talked with him. So this is about 20 years ago or 15 years ago. But he said that, you know, it's kind of heady to the judge when you get praised by ABC, CBS, NBC, the New York Times. But on the other hand, you know, when you get constantly vilified by them, you know, it's tempting to just to essentially give in. Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute, I asked him one time, you know, why is it that liberals never change, but conservatives on occasion will drift over, you know, to the liberal side, and in some cases even, you know, more so, be just kind of almost consistent liberals when they shouldn't be. But anyway, and he said he thinks it was all about power. If you're a conservative judge, you're essentially pushing away power. But if you're a liberal judge, you're saying, hey, I have the right as a justice to legislate from the bench. I mean, they don't use those words, but that's essentially what they're doing. So in other words, to Wesley Smith, it's about power. I don't know. But what are your thoughts of the leftward drift that doesn't exist? The ones on the left never drift to the right. What's wrong with these people?
It's so true. And you know what's interesting? That's actually a question that the Trump administration was asking judges. That became part of their vetting process for exactly the reasons that you're saying. It's like, wow, what is this gravitational pull
towards
the left? And trying to see it, because I think their idea is if judges understand what that is, they will be better able to fight it. I think part of the challenge is they're swimming in the currents of the mainstream media, which is always pushing them to the left.
Yep.
Washington, D.C. society and big government town, you know, it's all of the Georgetown cocktail party.
Yep.
And I think the culture in so many ways is going to tell them, well, you need to, you think of the Bostock case, for example. So many people were talking about it in terms of, well, is this, you know, the right thing policy-wise I want? Is this how I want our anti-discrimination law to look? And that's actually not the judge's job. So they get tempted by people asking them to make these grand decisions on policy matters. That's never their job, but it's always easier to grab more power. It's much harder to let go and say, actually, not my job. Sorry, I can't do that. Can't help you on that one. So there's a natural tendency there to try to want to get power, to get acclamations from the media, from the elite. But I have to say that it's not worth, as Justice Thomas would always say, he said, I took a vow and an oath to uphold the Constitution. And I'll be darned if you guys are going to make me go back on that. When I take an oath before God, I mean it. And I think that's what we need in our justice, is someone who's saying, I don't care what you're dangling in front of me or what you're threatening me with, I'm going to do what I know is legally right.
You know, that's interesting. You mentioned God, and I think that's a very important factor. I think Clarence Thomas, whom you clerked for, as I understand, how was right. he as a person, by the way?
Oh, just an amazing person to work for, and so down to earth. You know, in the courtroom, in the building, rather, he knew everyone in that building. He would know the elevator operator and what team he rooted for, and how his mom was doing if she was in the hospital. All these things. You know, some of the people, the justices, they knew they were the justice and you were just the clerk. He really treated everyone just as a genuine human being.
Nice.
And I couldn't ask for a better mentor or boss.
That's so cool. And but going back to him, part of his strength, I think, in, you know, going against the tide, is, you know, that his faith is firmly rooted in the Lord. And I think the same would be said of the late Scalia and also of Samuel Alito, because it must take a lot of strength to be able to, you know, go against the system. And by the way, before President Obama was elected, I think it'd be safe to say that Clarence Thomas was the most influential and important black American in the history of the country, again, before Obama. And yet he was never given credit for that because he was conservative in his opinions.
Initially, the African American History Museum that opened just a few years ago didn't even include an aspect on his judicial career. So you're going, wait a minute. This guy is, and by the way, because he served a life term, he has outlived President Obama in terms of his continued influence in the government. So
yes,
it's really amazing that he gets overlooked. And as he would say, it's often just because, you know, people would say, well, you're the wrong black man. They only want to see one perspective. But I think his life, too, he's so used to people discounting him or not giving him credit that he's like, you know what, you can't tempt me with that anymore. He has a prayer in his office called the Litany of Humility, which talks about asking God to not be seeking praise, but to be seeking humility all the time. And if you're really praying that seriously, you're going to be able to stand firm against all of these temptations to try to appeal to, the opinion pages rather than what you know is the correct legal answer.
Do you remember that prayer offhand? Tell me more about that.
Oh yeah, so it's by Cardinal Mary Duvall, and it's actually a really hard prayer to pray. It's like, Lord, you know, that others may be chosen and I may be left aside. Lord Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. Because we don't even want the things that are in this prayer, right? This is like, I don't even, you know, that others may be preferred to me in all things. Jesus, grant me the grace to desire it. You know, and so all of these different, and I thought, you know, I just went, this is probably the only prayer of Clarence Thomas that the media is happy to fulfill, because they always are trying to say that everyone else is smarter than him or make, you know, snide kind of slightly racist comments about it. But if you're really willing to embrace that humility, and you know, if you Google it, Litany of Humility, it'll come up.
Litany of Humility.
All of his office. Yes.
Okay.
That's a beautiful prayer.
All right, I will have to look that up. And you said Cardinal Mary? There was a cardinal named Mary?
Mary Duvall. I don't know who comes up with these names, but you know, talk to Mrs. Duvall.
Okay. All right. Good. What else? We only have about a minute or two left. As we move forward, how important is this 2020 election when it comes to the judges?
Oh, wow. You know, the stakes are incredibly high. The next president is going to be probably filling multiple seats on the Supreme Court, and not to mention hundreds of appellate judicial positions. And we know how important it is to have judges. You can watch with the Trump administration, where many of these judges just automatically rule against him. They apply a different standard to him than they have to other presidents. I don't think he should win every time, but I don't think he should automatically lose every time. He should be given the same standard as every other president has been given. And when you have judges that aren't doing that, it shows you we just need to clean house and have a system of judges who are going to obey the rule of law. My worry is, and my concern is, on the left, the loudest voices are clamoring for even more activist judges. And Joe Biden seems to be just willing to go along with whatever the loudest and most radical voices on the left will say. So far, Trump is the only one who's even told us what kind of people he put in the court. Now he said he's even going to update that list so we have a better idea. Whereas you've got Biden still refusing to say what he would do. He's hiding in his basement, I guess, waiting for word from the radicals to find out what his next move is supposed to be. But I would just say, what's he hiding?
Wow. All right. So there's a lot at stake in the election itself. And one thing I will say for Trump, not only in terms of appointing these people, but when they've been besmirched and so forth, he has fought back, which he did, of course, famously. And you wrote a whole book about it, Justice on Trial, which you wrote with Molly Hemingway. We're basically out of time. But I guess judges are extremely important, right?
Oh, yeah. And they serve for life. So these guys are going to long outlive this president, maybe the next one in office, in terms of their influence on the American judicial system.
JudicialNetwork.com. Carrie Severino, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.